This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 18. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network, and I am your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley, the man who can still buy a Glock 17 with full 17-round mag in Colorado. And I am Jacob Balson.
And Jacob is the guy who has a flag on the wall made from blue, red, and white shotgun shells.
It's so cool.
No, you don't have any white ones. Oh, you do have white ones.
There's
in there
white
too.
Ones. Yeah,
yeah, it's dang cool. Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. I'm so jealous. It was made for you by your coworkers, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was a goodbye from my last job.
Yeah. Yeah, and one benefit, by the way, of being a law enforcement officer in Colorado is I am exempted from the magazine limit. So you are correct. We are also joined today by Matthew Marister from Lucos Tactical. Matthew.
Hi, guys. Thank you. Love watching here in the show, and really happy to be here again.
Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah.
If you guys haven't listened yet to episode number 17, which was our news episode for this week, you totally missed out. And in that episode, we introduced Matthew and a little bit about him. So if you want to learn a little bit more about him, go back and listen to episode number 17. And so this week, we're talking about the title of this episode is To Chamber or Not To Chamber. And this is, of course, focused around the whole controversial topic. It's one of the most controversial topics amongst gun owners. Do we carry our guns with a round chambered or not? Right up there with the age-old debate of 9mm versus 45 or 40, we'll be looking at all the angles to this practice, the pros and cons of both sides of the issue of carrying a gun chambered. And Matthew did a fantastic job writing an article for the website, usafirearmtraining.com, talking about the whole issue of carrying with a round in the chamber. So we're really looking forward to his input on this episode today, and we thank him for joining us. We also thank all of you, our listeners, for joining us as well. We hope that you're enjoying the show. But first, before we get any further, today's episode is featuring the Sig Sauer Elite Performance V-Crown Hollow Point Ammunition. We sell this on our website, but more information will be coming up on that later in the podcast. So, without further ado, let's get into the meat of it, gentlemen. Once again, to carry or around in the chamber or not to? I definitely know where I sit on this, and I'm pretty sure I think I know where you guys sit. But for our listeners' sake, let's bring them into the loop. Let's first talk about a couple of, where does this come from? Like, why is there even a debate? What do you guys think?
Yeah, well, I think initially talking about the topic, you have to understand the context of, carrying around in the chamber as far as, for your personal defense firearm, something that you have on your body, used it for a split second, incident where your life or somebody else is at risk of death or serious bodily injury, that, do you necessarily want to carry with a round in the chamber or not? And I wrote the article. I tend to kind of pick these controversial topics, and I like that. It gets debate flowing and different ideas, and I definitely like hearing opposite sides. But my opinion, I'm not a sports shooter. I'm not a competition shooter or anything. My mindset has always been defensive training. And so my opinion on it is, you carry with the round in the chamber all the time. I'm sure you guys have your opinions too.
Yeah, and that's a great... Go ahead.
I'll play devil's advocate a little bit. My opinion is the same. I think you need to have a round in the chamber because otherwise it's an awesome hammer. You could throw guns at people and maybe hurt them too, but you really need a round in the chamber. That said, I think what I hear from people who don't see eye to eye is that there's a huge safety concern, or maybe instead of calling it a safety concern, what I think a lot of people say or why they feel so strongly about this is they say, to not have a round in the chamber is a significant safety advantage. You know, there's a huge peace of mind. And I'll admit I'm guilty when I first, you know, before I was an instructor, but after I did have my first concealed carry permit, I thought of it this way. In my mind, I thought, well, if I don't have a round of the chamber, there's a significant greater amount of safety or peace of mind that comes because it's like, well, I know that there's that one extra step necessary to make the gun dangerous. Like it just can't go off if there's not a round immediately in front of the firing pin. And so that was kind of the thinking in my mind was it's just that extra cushion of peace of mind. That's why I remember doing it that way for years, frankly.
You know, Jacob, I can respect that perspective, and here's why. Recently, there was a news story, and I don't recall if we featured it or not, but I know I came across it. And there was a gentleman who he was, I guess, trying to get back into his car, and he was carrying concealed. He had a gun in an inside waistband holster, I think kind of more or less like small of back or close to there, or maybe just a really rearward, you know, traditional inside waistband as far as, you know, maybe he's carrying like at about 5 o'clock or something. But anyway, he's getting into his vehicle and somehow, and I never did see, you know, if anybody ever, you know, reported or officially stated, you know, this is what happened. But somehow his gun fires and it shoots him right through the buttock, you know. And by the way, I always like to say, buttock.
It just makes you feel better. Yeah.
It sounds awesome. Anyway, so he shoots himself right to the butt. And, you know, like he says, his hand was nowhere near the gun, wasn't touching the gun. He just was moving. Now, I will say this much, and I'm always hesitant to like really put certain products and things on the spot, but I'm going to do it here because the holster he was using was that most basic, cheapest Uncle Mike's inside waistband holster that you could, you know, it's like $10 or whatever, you know, at your local Walmart or wherever, right? That you know, everybody knows what I'm talking about, right? It's that neoprene case, that little pocket, and all it has is a little plastic clip on it, and it'll have a retention strap too around the back or the top of it, you know. And but it's the thinnest, flimsiest, sorry, piece of crap, you know, of a holster. And so often, newer concealed, you know, I call them CCWers, right? So often, that's their first holster because they're like, I just spent $600 on a gun and a crap load on ammunition, especially self-defense ammo. So I'm going to buy this $15 holster over here. And sometimes this is the result because those things are so thin and flimsy and everything that you can, especially if they get worn at all, you can kind of manipulate the trigger inside of them to a degree. So has that been your experience, Matthew?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's probably one of the biggest concerns that most people have is, oh, what if the gun just goes off, right? And they see, you know, a video online of saying, you know, this gun is dangerous. There's a recall. If you shake it, it'll go off. And most gun manufacturers don't design their gun to, you know, go off from shaking it. You know, there's a deliberate action. Yeah. And that means pulling the trigger. And, you know, the problem is I think it's kind of twofold is one, people getting into concealed carry don't realize the importance of the holster, not only for comfort wise, but securing the firearm to your body and securing that trigger guard so nothing can access it. And they're looking for something that's very minimalistic, that is light and that, you know, cheap, and they don't realize the importance of the holster. And if you don't have a holster, absolutely carrying with the round in the chamber is negligent. And if you have a crappy holster, is just as negligent. But if you have a good quality holster, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's the most expensive, but just something that secures that firearm to your body and secures anything from getting into that trigger guard, the chances of that firearm, you know, just going off are next to nothing. So I think that's a huge point. That's a huge point to talk about, you know, getting over that fear that the gun's just going to go off.
Yeah. And I'm with you there as well, you know, because you're right. I mean, let's just lay it out there. if you own any of these striker fired guns or single action guns, let's just say Glock, Smith & Wesson M&P series of guns, whether that's the larger M&Ps, M&P Compact, Shield, doesn't matter. Glock, Smith & Wesson, Springfield Armory, the XD, XDM guns, right? They're also striker fired, XDS, whatever. Ruger, you know, the SR series of guns, the LC series of guns, LC9, LCP, LC380, whatever. Well, the original versions of some of those, I guess the LCP is not striker fired. It's hammer fired. But the newer LC9S and so forth, those are striker fired. Okay, so the point is, like, we have these guns, right, that in theory, all that needs to happen for them to fire is you grip the gun and press the trigger and they're going to fire, right? Traditionally, you know, our more traditional action firearms, we had double action, you know, let's just say, you know, think 6 hour, you know, 226, right? That's a very traditional action type gun. You can load it, round a chamber, and decock it. And it takes, you know, quite a bit of effort to press the trigger, being that, you know, 10, 11, 12 pound double action, whatever, to get that thing to fire. It certainly is likely not to occur inside your waistband or something if you got a piece of crap holster like the one we talked about. So the point is, do any of these guns ever just go off? And the answer is no. They don't ever just go off. Something must manipulate the trigger. And as you touched on, Matthew, the importance of a quality holster, one that really protects the gun, keeps it secure, perhaps even, you know, of course, retains it. But most importantly, the most important job that that holster does for us is it allows us to carry the gun on our person safely. And safely means that it protects that trigger and trigger guard area of the gun to keep it from inadvertently being pressed, because we know that the gun is not going to fire unless something interferes with that trigger. So Jacob told us a little bit about in his early days of concealed carry, he was kind of in that boat of, well, I know if I don't have a round in the chamber, it's definitely safe to carry this in my holster on my person. So tell us a little bit about your evolution, Jacob, to going from there to where you are now.
Well, the two things, the significant takeaways that impacted me, because I know that, like, the most common argument I hear, and I think we should address this, but let's put a pin in this and come back to it. But the most common argument we hear in favor of keeping a round in the chamber is speed oriented. People talk, well, it's going to take too long to rack the slide. I, for one, actually don't believe that's really true. I think if trained, you can rack that slide pretty dang fast. In fact, I think Guns and Ammo had an article on someone who did some, like, testing on speed. So I actually don't buy into the most common argument in favor of a position that I believe in. The two things that happened for me that I think were really significant, one was a pure factor of ammo capacity. Like, you know, we often refer to guns as X rounds in the mag plus one. You know, oh, this is 8+1. This is 12+1. And that plus one matters. It really matters. Like, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't think one more round making a big difference, you need to go listen to episode 10. Like, the more rounds you can carry, the better. You need more ammo. And back then, I was carrying a Glock 27. And I had an extension in the mag, so it carried 9. But that plus one meant I could have 10. And when I started to understand and become more educated about the criticalness, you know, how important it is to have more rounds, that became a factor. The other one that I don't hear a lot that for me was a big deal was the fact that even if I am going to draw that gun and then rack it as I extend it toward the target, that puts me in a position where I cannot shoot from close quarter combat position, right? I have to extend in order to rack, and which means that if I'm in a very close position with my target, I'm really kind of screwed because I can't just draw and fire.
Very good points there. And, you know, I thought it was interesting when you started off by saying, you know, that you don't believe that having to rack the gun really adds much in terms of time. I also agree that it doesn't add much time, you know, especially for me, you know, to draw, come out of the holster, turn to the target, join up hands, rack slide, extend out, you know, like it, it might add, let's say, I would guess somewhere on the order of a 20th of, or a, what I'm trying to say, 2/10 of a second. Say, yeah, okay, sure, so 0.2 seconds or something like that, okay? That's probably, to me, I would guess, just based on experience, I think it would add about that much. And I think that's fairly close with what that Guns and Ammo magazine article came up with, was about 2/10 of a second or so, somewhere around there. That doesn't seem like much, but here would be my counter-argument. My counter-argument would be 2/10 of a second in a gunfight could mean, you know, it could be a matter between life and death. We don't think that that's a big window of time, but it could be. And that's the thing, is like the not knowing for sure, for me, is kind of huge. But I also really appreciate, and I was going to make one other point along with that. Who are the CCWers that are most likely to be concerned with, or have a problem with carrying concealed with round and chamber? It's probably the newer shooters, the newer CCWers, to be honest. Would you agree? I mean, I'm sure there's some old timers, but I'd say by and large, most of the newer shooters are the ones that are usually, that's the questions I get in classes, is it safe to carry round in the chamber? And it's the lesser experienced folk a lot of time. Do you agree, disagree? What do you think?
I think so. Matthew, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. You instruct as well, and that's definitely the trend. And I think that goes back to just the lack of familiarization with their firearm, number one, their proficiency in training. You know, as you become more proficient and you understand your firearm and, you know, you practice and it becomes kind of second nature how you practice your draw, and you realize, it becomes muscle memory. Then you realize that, yes, I can do this safely. And, but it's that unknown at first when you're first putting that gun on you. It's like, you know, you first go to drive your car, giving somebody, a Lamborghini to drive as their first car, it's overwhelming. It's can kind of be scary. If you give them, you know, kind of something with a 4-cylinder motor, they're kind of a little bit more, okay, I can handle this. So I think it's that unfamiliarity, and that really scares them.
Yeah, and I agree. And so, you know, my point there is that if we ever jump on the bandwagon of, hey, you know, yeah, you should just not carry around in the chamber, it's not a big deal for you to draw and rack the slide, well, we're kind of expecting that these probably lesser experienced shooters, that where that's more of a concern, that the expectation is, you know, placed, there's a greater burden on them now with their lesser experience in handling their firearms, that they've got to rack the slide and do so correctly and properly and quickly. And I just don't think that's, the wisest approach. So here's some other considerations along with that. Besides the time factor, when do semi-automatics malfunction most of the time?
Typically. So most probably typically either failing to extract that round and eject it, or actually chambering the following round.
Yeah. And a failure to feed a round in a semi-automatic is probably one of the more common malfunctions, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
So this has always been one of my big issues with it being expected that I'm not drawing my gun. Especially in a civilian context, I am not drawing that thing until I am essentially in a deadly force encounter. And so now you're telling me that I'm going to draw my weapon and then have to rack it. And there's that potential that it could, at that very moment, jam up, have a failure to feed. That has always been kind of a concern for me. Every time this question comes up in my classes, I'm like, I tell them both sides of the story, and I recognize the need, I guess, to feel that sense of security, but I make sure they understand that, look, these are the considerations, these are the risks, and it's not just time we're talking about here. There's a whole host of other things that need to be considered. Sorry, go ahead, Matthew.
No, I couldn't agree more. I was thinking about what we last episode in number 17, we were talking about, kind of the Hollywood idea of how a gunfight plays out. And you know, we talk about time, and you know, the time that it takes to rack the slide isn't very significant. And truthfully, you know, if you train, yes, you can reduce that time. And there's actually drills. I know the IDF, they call it Mossad drill or Israeli drill, where they actually carry their firearm, you know, condition three or no round in the chamber, and they, you know, as part of their draw, they rack the slide. And for me, you know, there's a couple things to take into consideration is that we're not just talking about, you know, adding maybe a half a second or something. We're talking about a situation or an event that takes most deadly force shootings are going to happen within about 3-4 seconds at most. So, you know, it might seem like, okay, half a second isn't that big of a deal, but in the context of, you know, the whole event taking 3 seconds on average, and identifying that, you know, action is always going to be quicker than reaction. So that person, you know, you said you're only going to draw your firearm when you absolutely know that now I'm using deadly force. We're not, you know, just trying to scare anybody or anything. So we're already behind the time loop. So that person presents a firearm or a weapon. It takes our brain half a second to even, you know, understand what's happening. And then, you know, maybe a good draw takes, you know, a second or a second and a half maybe. So we're talking about 2 seconds now, and then we're adding another half a second. It doesn't seem like a lot, but all this time is slowly adding on and making us, before we can even address the threat, this is just getting the gun out and sights on target, or, you know, point shooting, however it might be, but getting that gun on target. So, you know, when we're talking about time and someone says, well, I can do it, you know, only half a second more, three quarter, you know, a quarter of a second, in the context of what we're talking about, if you had 5 minutes, that's not a lot. 3 seconds, a half a second is a huge chunk of time, you know?
Totally. Well, and how many rounds can a bad guy, or anybody for that matter, shoot in half a second?
Right.
2-3 rounds at least.
Right.
And, you know, and all depends on how fast he's working that trigger.
Exactly. And hopefully you've trained more than they have. But, you know, I think, kind of getting back to the issue of, you know, is it safe? You know, that's the biggest, you know, even giving time and everything. Some people might say, well, I'm willing to take that time, you know, because I want to make sure I'm safe. But the thing with that is some of them will say, well, I'll carry a double action, you know, gun because it's safe, but I won't carry a striker fire or a single action because it's not safe. You know, we'll carry with the round in the chamber. And I think that's kind of setting yourself up for failure in the idea that, yes, you know, a double action trigger is heavier, requires more deliberate action, but it's still, you could still potentially, if you're unsafe, take the same action, unsafe action with a single action pistol, striker fire, versus a double action. If you're unsafe, you're going to be unsafe regardless of what kind of action you have on that firearm. So I think relying on the firearm to be the safety, is kind of putting it in the wrong basket. You should be, you know, you should train so you're safe with the firearm and not relying on an external safety or, you know, the action to be the safety of that firearm, even though, you know, inherently it might be a little bit safer to have a double action trigger, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, it reminds me of the scene from Black Hawk Down, I think it is, you know, where Eric Bana, the actor, you know, I don't remember the character's name, but he stands there in front of his major or captain or whomever, you know, shows his trigger finger and, sir, this is my safety, sir.
Exactly. You know,
which is true. I mean, you know, I have nothing against an individual that chooses to use a safety if their firearm has it. And definitely I advocate for, in the case of a 1911 being carried in condition one, you know, cocked and locked, as they say. But in all honesty, with the exception of my 1911, I'm trying to think now, I might own like one or two other guns. I've got quite a few handguns that actually have, I'm not counting rifles. Pretty much every rifle has a safety, but I might own like one or two handguns that have safeties. Everything else does not. Cause I see here, and this kind of gets back into my philosophy as it relates to my answer for carrying with around a chamber or not. And part of that philosophy is recognize that when I've got justification and the right, you know, opportunity to use deadly force to stop a deadly force encounter, to stop a very active and deadly threat towards me, the threat already has the advantage in the situation. I mean, number one, you know, and Brandon Scott that was just with us on a podcast episode a couple episodes ago, where I remember he said something, and I don't know why it stuck in my mind. I mean, I think the same way, but you know, he said, you know, we are defensive shooters. Like, we're always on defense. We're never on offense, right? And so we don't start drawing and using the gun until, guess what? The bad guy's already got the drop on you, sort of thing. You know, the situation is already it's already very, very, very bad for you as the defensive-minded civilian shooter. And so I want to simplify the process. This is my philosophy. I want it as simple as possible for me to respond to that threat in every possible regard. So that's why this is Riley Bowman's philosophy of carrying concealed. That is why I, as much as possible, I always carry on my strong side hip. Sometimes inside waistband, sometimes outside waistband, but it's always right there near my strong hand. You know, secondly, I am always carrying with round and chamber because, like Jacob said, I want to be able to shoot close combat position if necessary. I don't want to have to be concerned with taking off a safety or racking a slide before I can make my gun ready to fire. All I want to think about is get it out of the holster quickly and safely, as much so as possible, and on target, and start pressing the trigger. That's it.
Absolutely. And you know, when you start talking to new shooters or people that haven't been exposed to what a deadly force encounter is and the dynamics involved and how quickly and the movement, and all they've ever done is shot on a stagnant range at a paper target. When you start throwing things at, and they say, well, I can rack the slide. That's fine. And you say, okay, well, what if this person is 2 feet away from you and you need to use that hand to defend your face? You know, they're, you know, going to hit you with an object and you want to defend your head, which is natural. How are you going to defend yourself and rack the slide? You need two hands to rack the slide. And I know there's techniques, you can rack it on your belt, your boot and those things, but it's obviously going to extend the time. But these drill or these techniques where you rack the slide always involve two hands. And, you know, whether it's a tactical reason why you can't use your hand, say it's injured or you're defending yourself, or it's a physical ailment, maybe, you know, older shooters, maybe they have, you know, we talk about elderly, you know, and some women, they have difficulty racking the slide. And you know, like you said, you want to make it as simplistic and basic as you can. And, you know, by creating an extra step that requires, you know, thinking to get that slide racked, maybe they don't have the physical strength. And you say, well, they shouldn't be carrying, you know, they should carry a revolver or something like that. You know, that's kind of narrow-sighted. You know, I don't like to be an absolute person where, you know, you're wrong 100%. And I'm, you know, there's so many different people out there that have different ideas and reasons for caring that, we can't just kind of pigeonhole everybody and say, you know, if you can't rack a slide, then you must carry a, you know, revolver or something like that. I just think once they start looking at it as a real life scenario, they say, wow, I don't have a lot of time in that half a second. I'd much rather be creating space or getting to cover or creating angle or identifying the threat and reevaluating the situation rather than spending time racking a slide.
Yeah. You know, and you said something really, really key is a lot of folks that I work with, and I'm sure to an extent that you work with, that are lesser experienced shooters and probably have never in their life been in a deadly force encounter or have never even really thought, like really thought through what a deadly encounter is like, and what is all involved and what it needs to be considered. They're not aware of how important it is to keep it simple. Because I promise you, every single thing that, you know, even if it's just a little, everything that you do that might make a certain process more complicated for you when you need to operate quickly. I just said operate. That's funny. knowing the connotation around that word these days, you need to operate quickly under stress, right? That is, you want to, anything that complicates it just makes it so much harder. And it's not, you know, that's why I'm just, everything about the way I, you know, concealed carry for me is a lifestyle, and everything about my lifestyle that supports that is like, how can I make this process simpler, easier, more reliable, more effective and efficient? And so very good points that you touched on there, Matthew. I want to ask you, so let's say, I think we're making obviously it very clear that our case is, or our viewpoint, and this is obviously the case you make in your article. And once again, just a reminder, if you want to see Matthew's original article, it's found on our website, usafirearmtraining.com, and we have a link in the show notes. And so go there and read it, because he addresses, you know, pretty much all of these things as well. But Matthew, let's say we got someone that is just adamant about, you know, not carrying around in chamber, and you're making sure that they understand that, hey, here's what you need to be concerned with. And maybe I've even had it too, where I've had students where they're like, I am just not comfortable having that thing chambered.
Right.
And then they can't even work the slide. Like you're doing a little range time with them and they're like, you know, like, and it's like, you are completely set up to fail right now.
Right.
How do we educate, and how do we help someone that's like that, in that type of frame of mind, you know, overcome that fear or concern?
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because as instructors, you know, we don't choose who we instruct. We don't just pick out the people and say, this guy agrees with me and I'm going to help him, or this guy's an easy fix, I can teach him, and this person, I don't want to deal with them. We owe it to the shooters to give them the proper instruction to get them up to speed, whether or not they ultimately decide to carry with the round in the chamber or not. But you know, I have it quite a bit. You know, where the exact scenario you say plays out, and there's a couple things that I normally do, and I ask them to kind of think about their initially. Think about, you know, are you prepared to use your firearm? Because some people think simply having a firearm on them, whether it's loaded, you know, round in the chamber or not, makes them safer. And I would say inherently that's a kind of a bad philosophy to have, because simply having a gun on you doesn't make you any safer. You need to be able to use it. And so when I kind of pose that to them and I say, you know, are you ready to use a gun? Well, yeah. Okay, well, let's put you through a little scenario. You know, I want you to draw it out with no round in the chamber, chamber it and engage a target, and they can't rack the slide. And I say, okay, well, now you have a gun that you can't use. So, you know, are you right? Do you want to use this gun? Do you want to use it to protect yourself? Yes. Okay, well, let's see. You probably want to carry, if you want to carry this firearm, then you probably want to carry a round in the chamber. And I understand that, you know, clearing malfunctions and things like that is very important to be able to work the slide. But for this argument, let's say that, you know, they want to carry this firearm, but they just, you know, they can't really under stress function or work the slide. And I say, there's a couple things you can do. You can carry your firearm at home with, you know, a snap cap inside, you know, or a dummy round. And that way you have it in, you know, it's cocked and locked, let's say for a 1911 or a Striker fired, the slide is racked, firing pins ready to go, or Striker's ready to go. And you carry it just like you normally would. And every so often, you know, you check that firearm and see, hey, has the hammer gone forward or has my trigger gone to the rear? And you'd obviously be able to see if you know, that striker had been released. And you do your typical routine, things that you would definitely say, well, I wouldn't want to do that. I'm going to cut the grass, or I'm going to run, or, and kind of put it through the paces. And over time, you know, you do that for a week or so, and you see that, yeah, I have a good quality holster. Nothing's affecting the trigger. I'm really putting it through kind of a torture test, and it's not firing. It's the hammer isn't, you know, going forward or anything. It can kind of give you that confidence to say, you know what? Yeah, I kind of do trust the mechanics of how this works, and I do trust my gear that, you know, it's not going to allow it to fire just, you know, that, you know, safety concern of it's just going to go off. It hasn't just gone off. And then they can kind of get that confidence level up.
That's a really great suggestion. I like it a lot. And I think, did you mention that in your article as well?
I did. Yeah.
That's what I thought. It's really, really a good way, I think, of boosting confidence in a newer shooter. I mean, number one, it's always good practice, I think, before a newer shooter, an inexperienced shooter that's going to, particularly for the first time in their life, start carrying concealed, to get a good quality holster, the holster that they have confidence in, that they're going to probably use, strap it on themselves, put their gun in it, unloaded, whatever. I mean, probably ideally at first be unloaded or with snap caps, like you suggested, and just wear it around the house until it starts to become, you know, more familiar to you and you start to get used to what that gun feels like on you. And also then that sort of practice helps you learn that, oh, gee, you know, like I don't want to print when I'm carrying concealed. I want it to remain concealed. And in some states, it's an absolute necessity that it remains such, because maybe open carry is not permissible at all. And so, you know, you're wearing this about and you're practicing and you're getting used to it. And then you will notice that, oh, I need to be careful when I bend over or when I twist my torso or when I try to reach up high, or, you know, just all these little daily things that we do that once you've got a gun, you know, strapped to you, particularly if it's on your waist, you need to be really mindful of some of those things. And you're not going to learn them until you actually do it. And practicing at home is a great way of getting started. Here's something else that I've had good success as far as, I'm a very logical minded person. And so trying to explain to someone that this gun will never fire pretty much until, you know, the trigger is pressed. Let me show you why. Let me show you how it's designed that basically keeps it from being able to fire. And I will take a gun and disassemble it, right? And so we just say, take a Glock, take it apart, take it down to, this is a good thing that I do a lot of times with students anyways, is showing them, you know, the different parts and pieces of a handgun. And so we take this Glock apart, we're down to a slide assembly, pull the recoil spring out, pull the barrel out. All right, pass that slide around. Okay, folks, looky here. What is this little plunger thing? You know, like you could push on that. It goes, you know, in and out, in and out. It's got a pretty heavy spring on it too, you'll notice. What is that? Oh, I don't know. Well, let me explain. This is the device that keeps the firing pin from being able to pass through and strike the primer on the cartridge. And they're like, oh, and guess what, guys? This thing does not, you know, guess what pushes it up? It's the trigger. There's a this trigger bar that goes from the trigger and it goes to the rear of the gun where it's activating the sear. And there's this little thing on there that pushes up on that. And it doesn't get that firing pin block or drop safety or striker safety. There's all these different terms for it, right? It doesn't get that thing totally up and out of the way, clearing the for the striker or firing pin to go through until that trigger is pushed all the way to the rear. Oh, yeah, you know, and like the light
like
bulb goes off.
Eye-opening event. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like that thing cannot fire as long as that safety. And I recognize that is a mechanical device. And so I always say, you know, any mechanical device, you know, can, you know, and will at some point fail, but I can't find any documented evidence of any modern semi-automatic handgun where that particular device has yet failed, particularly amongst our kind of big four, which to me, I say big four, it's Glock, it's Springfield, it's Ruger, it's Smith & Wesson. There's obviously others, but HK, SIG, they all have, all modern semi-automatics have that striker safety or firing pin block or whatever, whatever you want to call it, they have that built into them. And so they cannot fire unless that trigger is pressed all the way to the rear and held there. So because you could, in theory, actually trip a trigger, but if your finger didn't stay on it and it like came off of it fast enough and the hammer falls, let's just say on a hammer fired gun in particular, that firing pin block has to be totally lifted all the way through the firing cycle of the gun for it to function.
Right. So, and I think that's important because, that goes back to understanding how the gun functions and understanding your equipment. I was thinking about this the other day, and I said, I was trying to explain this to somebody, and I was thinking, do people carry with an empty chamber in their revolver? Do they have set up their cylinder so it's on an empty chamber? Probably not, because they feel safe because either A, it's a double action trigger, or B, they can see the hammer forward and they feel mm-hmm. like, okay, the hammer's forward, I feel good. But when you give them a striker fire pistol and they don't see how it functions, it's that unknown. And if you could take like a Glock slide and make it clear and let them see, okay, here's your round in the chamber, it's cocked, ready to go. But see, the striker cannot hit the primer at all. It's blocked, just like you said. If they could see that, and you can show them videos and things like that, but if they could actually feel it and see a clear slide and actually see basically a hammer forward, I think it would be that similar light bulb going off saying, wow, I feel a lot more comfortable. It's not the unknown, it's not the man behind the curtain pulling strings inside my Glock. It's definitely engineered safely. Think that would give them a lot more confidence as well.
And people got to understand, especially when it comes to Glock, because it is the most popular semi-automatic striker fired handgun in the world. It's carried by 70% law enforcement officers. And so just think in terms of, how many Glocks are out there in the world? I mean, just an insane amount, right? How many total man hours spent carrying those things and 99.9% of the time with rounds in the chamber? And like, they just don't go off unless we have a failure on our part. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, talking about that guy that shot himself in the butt, using a crappy holster, or just being unsafe yourself. As long as you're doing your part, using common sense, using good quality gear, that sucker is not firing until you tell it to. And that is why ultimately I've made that determination for myself. I'm not concerned about it at all. I mean, right now on my waist, I've got my Glock 17 fully loaded, round in chamber, 17 plus one. And, it's totally cool. I would never worry about it at all. So that's...
Yeah, and I know I'm going to upset some of the 1911 guys and everything, but I also carry a Glock, and I carry a Glock 27, and I also carry it appendix style. So if there's any reason why I would, shy away from or think that it was unsafe to carry with a round in the chamber, carrying appendix style would amplify that to me.
Absolutely.
And, I only carry with a holster that's designed for my gun that covers the trigger guard. And I feel confident that gun is not just going to go off. And I've trained enough where I know my draw. I'm not going to put my finger on that trigger before my gun is, aimed at that threat and oriented towards that threat and ready to go. And I think, it's just, we need to get get the people confident in their gear. And, you know, and at the end of the day, if they still don't feel comfortable, I know there's some instructors out there that say, well, if you're not comfortable with carrying around in the chamber, then you shouldn't carry it at all. And I'm definitely not of that mindset. I think that if you've taken, you know, you listen to this podcast, you read articles for and against it, and you still determine, hey, I don't want to do that. You make that calculated decision and you weigh your pros and cons and you make that decision. And, but you just do it knowing that there are limitations to what you can do and speed and two hands and such. And you make your decision, but don't make that decision based on lack of confidence or lack of understanding of, you know, how it functions. And I think that that's the critical difference, you know. Don't make it out of arrogance, make it out of a decided decision based on all the facts.
Yeah. What would you say to the 1911 folk, you know, or people that say, you know, I carry a 1911, I carry a single action. I am just not comfortable with that round being in the chamber and that hammer cocked and, you know, it's got a 3.5 pound trigger or whatever, you know, like, right. What do you say to those folks?
Yeah, I mean, it's what is one of the most, it's the longest production run, you know, make of handgun carried throughout, you know, our history. So there's probably more 1911s that have been carried throughout some sort of time. And we don't have a rash of people shooting themselves with 1911s. It's designed to be carried that way. It can be very intimidating looking, you know, just looking at it with the hammer back, it's like, oh my gosh. But if you understand that that is the way the gun is designed to function, you know, it's just kind of gives you that confidence. And I think I'm thinking back now to some of the, as growing up seeing like cartoons and things like that, and you see a gun fall, right? And the hammer's back, hits the ground, hammer goes forward and it shoots around. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the concept that most people think, that if I drop this gun, it's going to shoot. If the hammer's back, it's going to shoot. But they don't understand. It goes back to understanding the function of the gun and how it operates. And most guns have, you know, at least current guns have drop safeties. They're designed not to discharge when dropped. You know, no manufacturer wants to get sued, and they normally, you know, implement as many safeties as they can. And one of them is obviously a drop safety. Yeah. So I just think it all boils back down to lack of understanding, lack of confidence in their abilities, and lack of confidence in how the gun's designed. You know,
totally. You know, and you mentioned the drop safety, which, I mean, that's the same device I'm basically talking about. You know, when I mentioned the firing pin block safety, whatever, I've heard like 5-6 different names. It doesn't really matter. It's this device that keeps that firing pin from going forward. And yes, even the modern, you know, made in the last, I don't know, 20 plus years, maybe longer, even the 1911s have that. You know, the original ones did not, but the new ones, they've got that safety built into them. But here's another thing too. I mean, 1911, I mean, think about it. It's got the active safety, the manual safety on the side, on the frame. You got to flick that thing down. But what else? You got to also have your grip on the back of the gun. Yeah, on the back strap of the grip that is depressing that grip safety. And if neither one of those safeties are removed, yet alone the drop safety built into the gun, that hammer is incapable of going forward. So it's a very safe platform at the end of the day. I mean, it requires, not only does it require a finger pressing the trigger, but it also requires a firm grip around the back of the gun. So it can't fire unless it's in your hand.
Exactly. And I think that underscores the fact when you say, you know, how many safeties a 1911 has. The ultimate safety, and I know, you know, you mentioned it before with the Black Hawk Down, is the trigger has to be pulled. And we, you know, sometimes people overlook that is, and they say, okay, double action, single action, does it have a manual external safety? But ultimately that trigger has to be pulled somehow. And if you are being safe with the firearm, the probability of that gun going off unintendedly should be next to zero.
Yeah, totally.
You know, nothing's absolute. So, you know, I can't say 100%, but if you're safe, that probability is zero, no matter how many safeties you have. When I did that review back about the cider lock, putting an external safety on the Glock, you know, I was kind of getting people thinking about that, and you know, do you need a safety on your Glock? You know, especially you know the location of the trigger and or the safety, and that's a different issue. But when you think about that, you know, if Glock put a safety kind of like that backstrap safety on their pistol, I'm sure that you know there'd be some people that say, "I don't want that. I don't want that." Although, you know, I don't see how it would hurt. It doesn't hinder your draw or add any further steps other than gripping the gun. But I know that there would be people against that. So there's a wide, I guess, array of people that, you know, think about safety and carrying around the chamber and all those things. It kind of all intermingles, you know, a wide array from I won't carry with the round in the chamber to I don't want any more safeties than just my trigger safety and what's ever inside, you know.
Yeah, very good observations. And that's one of the beautiful things about living in this day and age that we do now. We truly live in, to put it frankly, a blessed time in that never before have there been more options and more guns to choose from. And so you don't like one gun, you can always find something else. And chances are there's a gun for you out there. You know, Kurt, I mentioned I'm carrying today. I got the Glock on me. I've carried 1911s. I've carried XDMs, XDs, SIGs. I've carried just about all of them, and they all have their pluses and minuses. But at the end of the day, I throw them in the holster. I practice, you know, and stick to all the firearm safety rules, and, you know, it works. So you got nothing to worry about. So I think we've hit it pretty well. And is there any last words from you, Matthew, about the topic?
No, I just want to underscore, you know, if after listening to this and reading articles and you still feel uncomfortable, by no means would I recommend anybody doing anything that they feel unsafe doing. You know, if not feeling comfortable carrying with the round in the chamber, then definitely don't do it, but take the steps to kind of see, you know, carry with the snap cap or dummy round and do those things and really analyze, hey, is this unsafe or is just kind of me not really understanding how the gun functions? And, you know, like I said before, if at the end you say, you know what, I've analyzed it and I, you know, my risk versus reward says I don't want to carry with the round in the chamber. Absolutely. Don't be forced into carrying with the round in the chamber. Although I highly recommend you do, you know, don't be forced into doing something you feel unsafe.
Yeah. And find a qualified and experienced instructor like a Matthew, you know, to spend a little bit of time with, and they'll show you the ropes. They'll show you what to do, what not to do, and how, you know, things work. And, you know, spending time with a good instructor, I think more than anything, can help a newer shooter in particular really get a handle on carrying a gun and carrying concealed. So excellent stuff here today, Matthew. You know, folks, you might have noticed that we lost Jacob. He stopped talking after a while there. It's not because we were ignoring him. He actually had somewhere he had to run. But we've got him back to give us his pick of the week and what's coming up next for him. So we'll have him give us those here in a sec. But first, today's episode is sponsored by the Sig Sauer Elite Performance V-Crown Hollow Point Ammunition. From one of the top makers of firearms comes some of the top defensive ammunition. I've shot it. I've tested it. I haven't yet been able to run it through some ballistic gelatin, although that's something I hope to do here in the near future. I've read some reports on it. It seems to do a very good job. It's functioned flawlessly, reliably, cleanly in all of my guns that I've tested with it. So it seems to be, you know, top-notch quality ammunition from Sig Sauer. Check it out. You can find it in our store at usafirearmtraining.com/shop. And you know what? Here's a little secret. We all know self-defense ammunition is typically very expensive. It is one of the best priced options for hollow point self-defense rounds. So find it there in the usafirearmtraining.com/shop in our online store there. On to picks of the week. Matthew, you're the guest. That means you get to go first. So what's your pick of the week, man?
Great. Thank you. Either you heard about it, you might not have, but it's called Arachne Grip. It's called the Slide Spider from the company Arachne Grip. And basically what it is it's similar to grip tape, but it's not grip tape. And it's specific die cut to specific firearms, and it goes on the slide, and it helps you rack the slide. So it gives you a little bit more grip to be able to function that slide, you know. And this is especially important for women or elderly who don't have the hand strength. And it can also really help in situations like where your hands are sweaty or your gun is wet, maybe in the rain or something, where if you've tried racking your slide in the rain, it can be somewhat difficult. So this is a really cool product from Arachne Grip.
Excellent. And I'm glad you picked that one. And you did a little review on the website once again for us, which was really great. I first came across it a couple months ago, and I saw someone at it was actually someone that was going through a course that I was teaching as a law enforcement course. So we had this law enforcement officer, and he had that Arachne Grip tape, the Slide Spider product, on his Glock. And I was like, whoa, what is that? And he's like, oh, he shows it to me, and kind of, you know, how it fit in there. I mean, it kind of blew me away. I was like, wow, this is so simple. But when you put your hand on it, it is very effective. I was really kind of wowed by it. And I have not yet installed it onto any of my guns, but I purchased one just the other day to give it a shot. So thanks for that report and for picking the Arachne Grip Slide Spider. Jacob, so what's your pick of the week, man?
Solar Motion Floodlights. Did I just say solar
interesting.
Motion floodlight? I didn't mean solar. I'm sorry. I meant outdoor. Try that again. Outdoor motion floodlights. I know I have a lot of weird picks of the week. Like, everyone expects me to talk about some awesome night sights or something. But I think probably one of the most critical, like, first thing deterrents to home intruders that you can have is good lighting. And I love those good floodlights that I can install on the side of my house, the backyard, front yard, side yard. And I can leave the light switch on all the time, and they know when it's dark. They detect dusk and dawn, and if they detect motion and it's dark outside, they turn on, and they start, you know, you can determine how long you want them to stay on before they turn off. And it's just like a leave it and forget it, really fantastic tool.
Nice. And also, I mean, yeah, I'll just say some of our more avid listeners of the podcast are probably aware that my neighbors have been having some issues with some criminal activity, and he has installed a crap load of floodlights. So my pick of the week is, I'm always like, I am passionate about holsters. I'm passionate about finding the perfect solution for carrying my guns. And I, by the way, just so it's clear, I do not believe in one perfect solution. I believe in a combination of many solutions. I tend to stay very much, you know, in the same frame of mind, as far as like, I carry on my strong side hip, maybe slightly behind. But I use a variety of techniques to do so. Occasionally I'll do appendix carry, but I'm not crazy about appendix carry. Just to me, it's more comfortable in the other location. But so my pick this week is yet another holster, and it is the Q series holster, the Covert model. And they have another one which I might feature as another pick another week. The Covert it's an outside waistband holster, and it's not necessarily anything new. I mean, there's other similar holsters out there, but this one I found was, you know, was very affordable. Now, they are limited in terms of models of guns. It's really geared more towards your Glocks, and I think they've got some for Smith & Wessons now. And so I imagine there may be some additional models that'll be coming out soon. But that's what I'm carrying the Glock 17 in today, is the Q Series Covert holster outside waistband. It is so slim and pulls the gun so close to my body. I've been concealing for the last week a full size Glock 17, just pulling the shirt over it and being absolutely confident with it, and very, very comfortable. Me being probably 90% of the time off duty carrying inside waistband, to this last week, like I said, every day has been outside waistband in this little Q Series covert holster. And it's like, oh man, you know, the comfort is just so much greater than having to stuff that gun inside my waistband. So working very well, although the coming months are getting warmer. So I don't know how much longer I'll be able to do outside waistband, but check it out if you haven't already, Q Series covert holster. So up next, Matthew, what do you got?
Yeah, up next, I got a really cool opportunity from Arms Corps, Rock Island Armory, to test out one of their new 1911, the 22 TCM 1911 from them. So,
cool.
The listeners haven't heard about that round, is kind of a proprietary round, high velocity 22 40 grain round. Fired from a pistol. It's like 2,000 plus feet per second. So real high velocity, minimal recoil, and excited to kind of put that thing through the paces.
Yeah, that, you know, Jacob and I saw this new 22 TCM at the SHOT Show this year, and it kind of caught my eye. You know, I mean, it's always there's always something that's just fun about new and innovative gun products, particularly new guns, new rounds. Who knows if this sort of thing will take off and really hit it big, but because there's certainly been lots of in the beginning, I always call them wildcatters, you know, wildcat right. rounds that, you know, many of those don't necessarily always, you know, really flourish, but this one seems kind of cool. I mean, basically a pistol sized platform. It's not going to be as cheap as shooting 22 long rifle, that's for sure, but I think it could be a heck of a lot more fun.
Oh yeah.
There's just something thrilling about a pistol that, you know, shoots at 2,000 plus feet per second. Oh, very cool. Jacob, what's coming up next for you?
Well, I have to move my gun safe, my big one. I'm really, yeah, yeah, it's going to be lots. I think I lost friends getting it into the house, and I think I might lose some more friends trying to get it out. We're going to be moving here pretty soon, so not looking forward to that at all.
Don't call me. Unless you're giving it away. Cool. So up next for me, I've got PPCT recertification on Saturday. Yay! What's PPCT? Well, that's basically, you know, hand-to-hand arrest control tactics, things of that nature. My Krav Maga certification expired, and I've been struggling getting into a Krav Maga class that's for law enforcement. So getting recertified in PPCT, that's so I can keep, you know, doing what I do on my nights and weekends. But that's always fun. So I'm going to go spend some time rolling around on some mats, getting cuffs put on me and my arms twisted around and all kinds of fun stuff.
It's always fun.
But it's good. It's good. So as always, we'd like to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your mobile or listening device. This is, and you've heard it before, the surest and easiest way of always having access to the podcast. If you haven't done so already, here's what subscribing does for you. You won't have to go searching for the latest episodes each week. You won't have to go to our website even. If you've got a smartphone, an iPhone, an Android device, if you have a podcast app on it, and I promise you, if you got an Android or iPhone device, you have one that's at least built in, but you could also use a third party one as well. If you subscribe using those podcast apps, then each time we release a new episode, boom, And I know, especially on the Android devices, like you're like immediately notified, hey, new episode. So really great way of following and always listening and staying up to date with the Concealed Carry Podcast. If you need help with knowing or learning or figuring out how to subscribe because you've never done anything like it before, which wouldn't be unusual, I promise. But to get this this radio type show, you know, on demand on your mobile device, go to usafirearmtraining.com/subscribe-to-podcast. And that's subscribe-to-podcast. In the notes, or the link will be in the show notes, of course, as always. And there are some helpful tutorial videos there of how to do this. Thank you again so much for those of you. I mean, we're well over, I think we're over 64 or 65,000 followers on Facebook now. And we always have lively comments and discussions going on there. We thank you so much for doing so. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, trying to be everywhere, you know, that anybody would like to try to follow us and stay in touch with us. Check us out, follow, like, whatever, because that's a great way of staying in touch. And once again, and I was going to throw out there too, Matthew, I have noticed you, sir, are very dedicated to maintaining a dialogue with folks that read and follow your articles and video reviews on the website.
I do try. Yeah, I do. I like to get the input, positive, negative, whatever input. I love getting the input and in feedback and talking. You know, I think we owe it to the readers and the listeners to respond. You know, to keep that dialogue going.
Which is, I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, Matthew does a much better job than I do of responding to comments and things on the forums, on the blogs and so forth. And so thank you very much for doing that. And so if you'd like to interact more with us or with Matthew in particular, because I know he'll respond to you, check us out on the website, usafirearmtraining.com. Read the articles, comment, like, share, et cetera, et cetera. And thank you, everyone that supports us in this podcast and in our business and for trying to proliferate, you know, Second Amendment rights. We sincerely and truly appreciate it. If you would please leave us a review of the podcast. And currently, really the only good place you can leave a review, an official review, is on the Apple iTunes platform. There is a link in the show notes, usafirearmtraining.com/podcast review. If you could please, please, please do that, oh, it'd be so awesome because one, it just helps us stay motivated. It helps us rank higher so more people will find us. And that means we'll be able to do even more and more and more and more and make it even more awesomer. So check it out. Leave us a review. We had a kind gentleman who wrote a nice review of the podcast on a Google groups page, which was really cool as well. So that'd be another, I guess, way of kind of getting the word out there. But the reviews on iTunes definitely help. Thanks so much. With any other questions or feedback, please contact us on one of our social pages or via our contact page at usafirearmtraining.com/contact. And so, Matthew, we're going to say goodbye to you, sir.
Thank you.
And we'll say goodbye to Jacob. And with that, we bid you farewell till next week. See you later.